All right. Welcome, everyone, to another deep dive here on the LexPlug podcast. Today, we're going to be taking a really close look at a case that comes out of the Missouri Supreme Court, State v. McFadden from 2013.
Yeah.
And this is a really interesting case if you were interested in death penalty law.
Absolutely.
And some other key legal principles.
That's a big one.
So today, we are going to be extracting the most important information from this case. And hopefully making it a little bit more digestible for you all.
Yeah, you know, the death penalty is a very complex area of law. And this case really kind of lays it all out there for you.
Yeah, absolutely. For everyone listening, just so you know, all of this information comes directly from the court documents and analyses of State v. McFadden.
Right. And this is, you know, a very detailed look into how the death penalty process works.
It is.
And so, you know, we're going to touch on some pretty key legal concepts here. Jury selection, admissibility of evidence, application of aggravating factors.
Right. Yeah. Really important stuff if you're studying law or practicing law.
Absolutely. Especially criminal law.
So let's get into it.
Yeah, let's start with the facts of the case.
Okay, so the victim in this case, his name was Ton Franklin.
That's right.
And
that's important to get right.
It is. Yeah, it's very important to get the name right. And this is something that sometimes gets messed up.
Happens a lot.
Yeah, so we just want to make sure we get that correct. So Todd Franklin, he was with another individual, Mark Silas.
Right.
And they were in a vacant lot when they encountered McFadden and an accomplice named Michael Douglas. So during this encounter, Douglas fired a gun. And it seems like he was just checking if Franklin was armed.
Yeah, it's kind of a show of force to intimidate.
Exactly. And so understandably, Franklin ran away.
Right.
And he ended up going into the yard of a nearby neighbor.
Right, a guy named Gregory Haslett.
Gregory Haslett, yeah. So
but the violence didn't stop there.
No, it didn't.
McFadden pursued Franklin onto Haslett's property. And even though Douglas had already fired a weapon, McFadden kicked Franklin and shot him twice.
Jeez.
Causing fatal wounds.
So really, really disturbing stuff.
Yeah, really sad.
And I guess this kind of sets the stage for the legal proceedings that followed.
Exactly.
So let's talk about that.
Okay.
What happened next?
So McFadden was actually convicted in his first trial.
Oh, wow. Okay, so he was found guilty the first time.
Yes, but that conviction was overturned on appeal.
Interesting. Why was that?
It was overturned because of a Batson violation.
A Batson violation.
Yeah, and this is based on a case called Batson v. Kentucky from the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And basically what that case says is that you cannot use peremptory challenges to exclude jurors from the jury pool just based on their race.
Right.
So in McFadden's first trial, the appellate court found that the prosecution had indeed excluded jurors based on race.
Oh, wow.
And so that's why the conviction was overturned.
So that's a pretty big setback for the prosecution.
It is a big setback.
So what happened next?
So they had a retrial.
They had a retrial.
And in the retrial, the jury found five statutory aggravating factors.
Five.
Five. So these are circumstances that make a defendant eligible for the death penalty.
Yeah, so that's a lot.
It is.
And so based on these factors, the jury recommended the death penalty.
Right.
And that recommendation was accepted by the trial court.
That's right.
So as you can imagine, this led to another round of appeals.
Yep.
And I guess we should get into some of the key legal issues that were brought up on appeal.
Yeah, let's do it.
So the first one, and this is kind of unsurprising given what happened in the first trial, there was another Batson challenge.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So in the second trial, the prosecution used a peremptory strike to remove a black person from the jury pool. McFadden's defense team argued that this was discrimination.
Yeah.
But the prosecution said, no, 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 no. We had a race-neutral reason for doing this.
Yeah.
This particular juror wasn't paying attention during jury selection.
Interesting. Okay, so they're saying that the juror was inattentive or disengaged.
Right.
And that's why they removed them.
That's right.
Okay, so what did the Missouri Supreme Court say about that?
Well, they agreed with the prosecution.
They did.
They said that the prosecution's reason for striking the juror was race-neutral.
Okay, so it all comes down to the Batson test.
Yeah.
And so, like, walk us through that a little bit.
So the first step of the Batson test is that the defendant has to show that there was discrimination.
Right.
They have to make a prima facie case.
Yeah.
And then the second step is that the prosecution has to give a race-neutral reason for striking the juror. And then the third step is that the judge decides whether the prosecution is telling the truth.
Okay, so the burden is on the defense to prove that the prosecutor is lying.
Exactly.
That's interesting because you know it's hard to get inside someone's head.
It is.
And determine their true intent.
Right. And so, you know, that can make it difficult to root out discrimination in jury selection.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, assessing someone's demeanor can be so subjective.
It is.
You know, what does inattentive even mean?
Exactly.
Like, how do you define that?
Right. Like, are they looking down? Are they looking at their phone? Are they, you know?
Yeah. So there's a lot of room for interpretation there.
There is.
And, you know, it makes you wonder about how this actually plays out in practice.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, are we really ensuring fairness and equity in jury selection?
It's a really big question.
It is a big question.
Okay, so let's move on to another legal issue that was brought up on appeal.
Okay.
This one had to do with McFadden's prior violent convictions.
Right.
And whether that information could be used as evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So how did those prior convictions come into play?
So the prosecution used these prior convictions as statutory aggravating factors.
Yeah, we talked about those earlier.
Right. And these are the things that can make a defendant eligible for the death penalty.
Yeah.
So McFadden's defense team argued that using these prior convictions was unfair, but the court said no.
No.
These prior convictions are specifically listed as aggravators under Missouri law.
So they're allowed.
They're allowed.
Okay.
And, you know, this is an important thing for law students to remember.
It is.
Because just because something's admissible doesn't mean it's always going to be admitted.
Yeah.
You also have to look at whether the evidence is more prejudicial than it is probative.
Right. So does the value of the evidence outweigh the potential harm to the defendant?
Exactly.
Okay. That's an important distinction.
It is.
Okay. So what about the fingerprint evidence?
Right.
There was an argument about that, too.
Yeah. So the defense argued that the fingerprint evidence was actually evidence of other crimes that McFadden hadn't been charged with.
Interesting.
And the reason they said that is because the prosecution's fingerprint expert said that McFadden's fingerprints were on file.
Right.
And so the defense said, well, that implies that he's committed other crimes in the past.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But the Missouri Supreme Court disagreed. They said that just because someone's fingerprints are on file doesn't mean they've been convicted of a crime.
Right. It could be for any number of reasons.
Right, exactly.
Interesting.
So they said that the testimony of the fingerprint expert didn't prove that McFadden had committed other crimes.
Okay, so it's really about the specific language that was used.
Right.
And the implications of that language.
Exactly.
That's fascinating.
It is.
Okay. So let's move on to jury instructions.
Right.
So there were some arguments about the way that the jury was instructed in this case.
There were.
So what were some of those arguments?
Well, one argument was that the defense didn't like that the jury instructions listed each aggravating factor separately.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. They said that that could unfairly sway the jury toward death penalty.
I could see that.
But the court said, that's okay. We've done this before.
Yeah.
And it's actually helpful for the jury.
Right. It makes it clearer for them.
Exactly. It helps them understand each factor and it avoids confusion.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. And the other argument had to do with the depravity of mind standard.
Yeah. What was that all about?
So depravity of mind was one of the statutory aggravating factors in this case.
Right.
And the defense argued that that phrase was too vague.
Yeah. I mean, how do you define depravity of mind?
It
seems very subjective.
It is.
So how did the court address that?
So the court pointed to a previous case.
A precedent.
Yeah, a precedent, State v. Preston.
Okay.
And in that case, the court had given some specific examples of what depravity of mind means.
Okay, like what?
So like things like torture.
Oh, wow.
Or killing a victim who's completely helpless.
Yeah. So those are pretty clear examples.
They are.
So in McFadden's case, the court said that the evidence showed depravity of mind. Because
McFadden shot Franklin while he was defenseless. Like he was running away, he was kicked, and then he was shot multiple times.
Even after he was already down.
Even after he was down.
So that's what the court considered depravity of mind.
That's right.
Yeah. Wow. That's a pretty powerful phrase, depravity of mind.
It is.
Really makes you think about the level of culpability there.
It does.
Okay. So the final legal issue that was raised on appeal was juror non-disclosure.
Right.
So what was that about?
So the defense claimed that one of the jurors knew McFadden, but hadn't disclosed that during jury selection.
And, wow.
And they argued that this should result in a new trial.
Yeah, I can see why they would argue that.
Like maybe the juror was biased. Right. But the court said no.
No.
And they reiterated a very important legal standard.
Okay, what's that?
So to get a new trial based on juror non-disclosure, the defendant has to prove two things.
Okay.
One, that the juror intentionally withheld information.
Intentionally?
Yes, on purpose.
Okay.
And two, that this non-disclosure actually prejudiced the defendant.
Yeah, so it's not enough to just forget.
Right.
You have to actively conceal the information.
Right, and it has to have harmed the defendant's case.
Yeah, so that's a pretty high bar.
It is a high bar.
To get a new trial on those grounds.
Right.
Okay, so we've talked about the factual background of the crime
mm-hmm.
and all the legal issues that were raised on appeal.
Right.
So now let's really get into the court's reasoning.
Okay.
And talk about some of the key legal concepts that this case illustrates.
Yeah, so for the court, there were several key factors that led them to uphold the conviction and the death sentence.
Okay.
First, they agreed with the jury that the aggravating factors outweighed any mitigating factors.
Hmm.
Specifically, the aggravating factors were the prior convictions.
Right.
And the depravity of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the court also found that the death sentence was proportionate to the crime.
Yeah, so it wasn't excessive or anything like that.
Right. And remember, the court emphasized that in Missouri, you only need one aggravating factor to recommend the death penalty.
Right. In this case, they had five.
They had five.
So let's revisit the Batson analysis for a second.
Yeah.
What's the main takeaway there?
So the main takeaway is that while you can't exclude jurors based on race,
right,
the trial judge has a lot of discretion when it comes to assessing the prosecutor's intent.
Okay.
So unless there's really strong evidence that the prosecutor is lying about their reasons for striking a juror,
mm-hmm.
the appellate courts are going to defer to the trial judge's decision.
Right, because the trial judge is the one who's actually in the courtroom.
Right. They're the ones who can see the prosecutor
yeah.
and the potential juror,
mm-hmm.
and they can assess their credibility.
Okay, so it's really about deference to the trial judge.
It is.
And then going back to that depravity of mind standard.
Right.
What's the big takeaway there for law students?
So the big takeaway is that depravity of mind is more than just killing someone.
Right.
It has to be something more than that.
Yeah, like torture.
Right, like torture or killing someone who's helpless.
Hmm.
And the court in this case relied on the definition of depravity of mind from State v. Preston.
Right, the precedent. Okay, and then finally, the juror non-disclosure issue.
Right.
What should law students take away from that?
So the key thing to remember is that to get a new trial based on juror non-disclosure, you have to show both intentional withholding of information
yeah.
and prejudice to the defendant.
Right. So both of those things.
Right.
Okay. So to wrap things up, what are some of the most important takeaways from this case for law students specifically?
Okay. So first, this case really shows how important statutory aggravating factors are in death penalty cases.
Yeah.
You really have to understand what constitutes an aggravating factor under the law.
Absolutely.
Second, this case shows how complex and challenging jury selection can be.
It is.
Especially when it comes to Batson challenges.
Right.
Third, this case highlights the importance of understanding the rules of evidence, particularly when it comes to prior crimes.
Yeah.
Fourth, this case emphasizes the need for clear jury instructions,
right.
especially when dealing with difficult concepts like depravity of mind.
Yeah, and courts often rely on precedent to clarify those kinds of concepts.
Exactly.
And finally, this case just shows how complex death penalty litigation is.
Yeah, it is.
And it really highlights the specific framework that Missouri has for the death penalty.
Right.
Okay, so we talked about how the Batson test works,
mm-hmm.
how prior convictions can be used as aggravating factors, the definition of depravity of mind.
Right.
And the standard for getting a new trial based on juror non-disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of really important stuff.
Yeah, State v. McFadden is a great case for law students to study.
Absolutely.
It really touches on some fundamental legal principles.
And it shows how those principles play out in a real-world context.
Exactly.
So as we wrap up, here's a final thought for you all to consider.
Okay.
So we talked about how the trial judge has a lot of discretion when it comes to assessing a juror's demeanor.
Right.
And whether a prosecutor's reasons for striking a juror are race neutral.
Mm-hmm.
So given that there's so much subjectivity involved in those kinds of assessments, how can we make sure that the jury selection process is fair and equitable?
Great.
You know, how can we prevent discrimination from seeping into the process?
It's a tough question.
It is a tough question.
You know, it's something we have to keep thinking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that this is something that's relevant not just for law students, but for all of us.
It is.
You know, as citizens, We have a responsibility to make sure that our justice system is fair and impartial.
Absolutely.
And that everyone has an equal opportunity to have their case heard by a jury of their peers.
That's right.
So that's all for today's deep dive.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening.
See you next time.
See ya.